Good morning. A person was on top of a ladder, putting together his sukkah. He leans over to reach some of the schach, and suddenly the ladder collapsed. He wakes up in the hospital with a broken back. So what's the first thing that he does? He calls a lawyer. The lawyer does a little research and finds out that the ladder was defective. There had been a number of other ladders produced by the same company that were also defective. So the lawyer is salivating. He puts together literally a 3-inch thick lawsuit. He sues him for damages, punitive damages, pain and suffering, the works. Fires off the lawsuit and then sits back waiting to see what the response is. He's waiting. A few weeks later, he gets a letter back from the company. He looks at it, and he notices it's a very thin envelope. He figures, okay, maybe it's a check. Rips open the envelope, and there's a little handwritten note. It says, "Dear sir, we are in receipt of your lawsuit for who knows how many millions of dollars. We noted from your name that you're Jewish. This latter company is owned by a Jew as well. I consulted with my Rav, and he told me, based on the story that happened, I owe you approximately $150. Enclosed, please find a check. If you have any issues, I'll be happy to go with you to a Rav or to a Bezdin to figure out what to do. Sincerely, Yankel Schwartz." What happens next? What is the halacha? The issue here is that, al pi halacha, assuming this Rav was correct, the latter company may owe you $150. According to civil law, if the fellow's attorney is correct, he's owed millions and millions of dollars. How do we deal with a conflict between halacha and civil law? Now this brings us to the issue of dino de malchusa dina. Now dino de malchusa dina is a concept that everyone has heard of. The law of the land is a law. Anytime you give a shiur on Choshen Mishpat, inevitably a few minutes into the shiur, someone will raise their hand and say, okay, it's very nice, that's the halacha, but dina malchus adina. So how do we apply this concept? Where does it apply? How far does it go? There's a tremendous amount of confusion about dina malchus adina. Some people assume dina malchus adina overrides all halachas in Shulchan Aruch. Forget about Choshen Mishpat, we follow the law of the land, and therefore they assume that you go with it completely. Other people seem to be under the assumption that it was that Dina Malchusa is a fake concept invented to appease the censors and to, you know, so that the government shouldn't get upset. As we will see, neither of these extremes are true. There is a concept, Dina Malchusa Dina is a clearer concept in halacha, but there are significant limitations which Mirtzeh Hashem will go through over the next few shiurim. Now, before we begin the actual sugya, a few parameters or a few disclaimers need to be made. The first is that when we discuss dina de malchus adina, when we discuss this great, how do we deal with a conflict between halacha and law, the discussion is only with respect to dina mamonis. The fellow fell off the ladder, and the question is, how much needs to be paid? If we're dealing with a question of iser v'heter, if the government would go ahead and pass a law outlawing Shabbos, outlawing Milah, this is not a question of dina de malchus adina. There already, it's called a gezeira shmad, and there many of our ancestors were literally moiser nefesh in order to keep Torah and mitzvahs. So the entire discussion is in dina mamonis. When do we follow civil law? When do we follow halacha? But the moment we're dealing with an isav heter, the moment a law would order a person to violate a mitzvah, to order a person to violate halacha, there, l'kuli alma, the halacha is you do not follow such a thing, and that's not included at all in the discussion of dina de malchus adina. The second important point is that the discussion of dina malchus adina is a discussion of to what extent halacha recognizes a civil law. Which means, If you go to Beis Din in a matter where halacha says one thing, or Chosh Mishpat says one thing, but law says something else. So the concept of Dino Malchus Adino will guide Beis Din. Beis Din will apply the civil law in cases that qualify, and therefore their psak will reflect the Dino de Malchus Adino. What Dino Malchus Adino does not do is give anyone a heter to go to Arkois. The Isser Arkois is the Isser of going to civil court, litigating in front of a Goyish court. That Isser is completely independent of the rule of Dino de Malchus Adino. And therefore, even in cases where we halacha will recognize and will apply the civil law, the place to determine or to litigate the matter would still be in Beis Din. So it will never be a heter to go to Arkois. It will simply guide the Beis Din in how to arrive at a psak halacha. Now the third point is that when we discuss Dina de Malchus and Dina, we're discussing whether if a person violates a law, or whether he has also violated a halacha. Now, what would be if you go over to an atheist and ask him, why do you obey laws? What? You're not religious, so why do you obey laws? So in all likelihood, it really depends where you ask the question. If you stop an atheist in the street of North Korea and you ask him why you obey the laws, he'll tell you what he means. I don't obey the laws. The dear leader will massacre my entire family. And that's why I obey the laws. Okay, that's a very legitimate reason to obey laws if you're afraid for your life. Now, if you'd ask the same question, perhaps in the streets of Russia, why do you obey laws? They'd probably give you a little bit of a strange look and say, we don't. If you ask the same question in the streets of New York, you go to a country such as the United States, and you ask someone why they obey the laws, so they'll probably give you a long-winded speech about democracy and the opportunities that they've had in the United States and what a wonderful country it is. Now, when we discuss the idea of Dina Malchus Adina, we are completely ignoring these points. In other words, if you're in North Korea, and you violate a law, you're brought in front of the judge, and you try to explain to the judge the reason why you violated the law is you heard a shiur on Dina Malchus Adina, and you decided that pi halacha that it's mutter, you're probably not going to survive the ordeal. So certainly if there's a malchus that says this is what needs to be done, and it's dangerous to disobey the laws, certainly a person, Dina Malchus Adina or not, it's for practical reasons, it's wise to obey the laws. Now, the same thing is true if a person is in a country where the country has done tremendous chesed and protected the person, given him opportunities, his family, his parents, his grandparents. So certainly the idea of hakaras hatov, the idea of midah, is a basic midah, a basic fundamental of point of Yiddishkeit. And therefore, in a situation where hakaras hatov, there's a moral reason for a person to obey the laws, then that certainly will apply. However, that is not reflected in the idea of Dina de Malchus Adina. The idea of Dina de Malchus Adina is a question of to what extent does a sovereign government, does halacha recognize civil law? In fact, many of the tshuvas that discussed Dina de Malchus Adina were written in Europe during the Crusades. It was a time where the governments did absolutely nothing for the Jews. They either actively or passively allowed the wholesale murder of Jewish blood. And still, the question is, if Dina Malchus Adina, then whatever laws are on the books, whatever laws are there, then they have to be followed. The same is true in the times of the Rishayim, the times of the Gemara. These governments were not friendly governments. These governments were not governments that the Jews had any hakaras hatov to, per se. But still, if Dina Malchus Adina, then we have to obey the laws. So throughout the entire discussion, it's important to keep in mind that we're dealing with a legal concept in Dina Malchus Adina. Certainly, if a person finds himself in a country where there is hakaras hatov, where the country has been extremely good to Klal Yisrael, then there are other reasons other than Dina Malchus Adina to go ahead and to make sure that you're a good citizen and you obey its laws. Now let's begin the actual sugya. No, Chil Hashem is a completely separate concept. Dina Machlusa Dina, as we've been learning Chayish and Mishpat here for a while. And what we've seen is whenever we discuss an issue, let's say we're going through Hilchos Ayinah, and we're discussing someone buys something and he buys a piece of karka and he's ripped off. So in Hilchos Ayinah, we learned, Ein Ayinah L'Karkois, you don't have any recourse. Now, that doesn't mean that it's mutter to go ahead and lie to a person about the value of the property. But what the person's over is Gnevis Das. Gnevis Das is not Ayinah. When we discuss in Dina Malchus Adina, it has nothing to do with Chilul Hashem. If you're going to cause a Chilul Hashem by doing something, that will be Asur Al Chilul Hashem. But the Isser will be Chilul Hashem, it will not be an Isser of Dina Malchus Adina. So in any case that we're dealing with, you're always going to have to keep in mind Chilul Hashem, you always have to keep in mind other factors of whether there's Hakar Satayiv to the government. We are going to be focusing specifically on the legal point of Dina de Malchus Adina. So let's begin with the Mishnah in Nedarim. The Mishnah in Nedarim says, Noyjin l'haragim l'charamim ulamuchsim. That if a murderer stops you in the street, your money or your life, they're trying to rob you. Or for that matter, charamim is a regular ganif, someone stops is trying to rob you. Ulamuchsim, or if you meet a tax collector. So now the Mishnah talks about three cases. Murderers, thieves, and tax collectors. You can see where this is heading. So the Mishnah says that if you meet such a people, the halacha is you're allowed to make a neder to them. Shehi truma af b'yishen truma shein shal beis hamelech af b'yishen beis hamelech. So halacha is if they want to know they're trying to rob you, and they see you have a fancy car, you have assets, you're allowed to tell them that this does not belong to me. It belongs to the kohen. It's truma. It belongs to the kid, to the melech. And that way, the person will not rob you, he will not take the asset. The tax collector wants to know, how is it that you're reporting $50,000 of income on your 1040, but there's a Lexus parked in your driveway? So you tell him, no problem, belongs to my brother-in-law, it's not mine. And the Mishnah says that is mutter, even though Nedarim is a very chamur d'kinyan. Over here, where you're doing it in order to save yourself, you're doing it in order to protect yourself, the halacha is that it's mutter. Now, before anybody runs out and goes ahead and amends their tax returns, let's learn a bit of Gemara. The Gemara says, "V'harmer Shmuel, dina d'malchus adina." Fret the Gemara, this Mishnah cannot be true. Because there's a member of Shmuel, dina d'malchus adina. The law of the land is the law. Now, this is a very interesting Gemara. Because we have a Mishnah that says, a halacha mufreshes. When the tax collector comes, do whatever you can to get out of paying taxes. The Gemara has a kasha on the Mishnah. There can't be such a Mishnah from Shmuel. Now, the Gemara doesn't ask a kasha on Shmuel from the Mishnah. The Gemara asks a kasha on the Mishnah from Shmuel. And the reason for that is, and as the Rush explains, that although Shmuel is the one that articulated the idea of Dina Malchus Adina, in reality, nobody argues. This is the concept or the idea of Dina Malchus Adina is so self-evident and there's no one that argues with it. And therefore, the Gemara says this Mishnah cannot be taken literally because there cannot be any shita that says you're allowed to make a neder, you're allowed to fool the tax collector. So the Gemara continues. The Gemara asks that Dina Malchus Adina. Therefore, how could it be mutter? So Gemara in Nedarim gives two terutzim. Bava Kama, there's a third terutz we'll get to in a different week. But Gemara in Nedarim says, Amar of Chinanar, Amar of Kana, Amar Shmuel, B'moichas she'en le'kitzvah. It's talking about a tax collector that does not have a set amount. Now, to understand what this means, we need a very brief history of how taxation used to work. If you ask people what their favorite five organizations are, so you'll get a number of different answers. Some people will say they're shul, Muncie Night Seder, shuv. Everyone will have their own answers. Generally, the IRS does not make it to the top five list. If you think about it, perhaps it should. Because what was the alternative to the IRS? How did the kings collect taxes before they had a bureaucracy? So the kings really had they didn't have any census. They didn't really know how many citizens lived in their country. They certainly didn't know how wealthy any of their citizens were. So they had to delegate the tax collecting. And what they would do is, the simplest way from the king's perspective was, he would auction off the tax franchise. Someone would come to the king, he would auction off the right to collect taxes in Muncie. People would come forward, they would bid on the right to be the tax collector, and the highest bidder would win that right, and he would become the official tax collector, and he would collect the taxes. Now, typically what happened is, or at least in many cases, what the king would do is, he would take whatever money he got from the auction, and the tax collector would then turn around, he'd go ahead and collect the money from the citizens, and whatever he collected was his. If he collected more than he bid, he'd make money. If he collected less, he'd lose money. And that was the setup. Now, if you had an auction and you were selling the right to collect taxes, who would win this auction? Who is this right the most valuable to? The one who collected the most. Now, in all likelihood, what that means is the fellow who won the auction was the biggest, nastiest, meanest, and most ruthless person in the city. And for him, this was a very valuable franchise because he'd be able to get or extort or squeeze out a lot of money from the citizens. If you were a nice, friendly, 5'2" wimp, you know, this franchise wouldn't be worth very much. You'd have a hard time collecting. So very often, tax collectors, these were not very popular people. Very often, they were totally ruthless. They would go ahead. Once they bought the taxes, they would go ahead and just do whatever they wanted. The king very often did not care. Once he got his cash up front, he doesn't care to do what you want, because adarabba, the more relaxed he is about the rules of the tax collector, the more people will pay him for that right. And therefore, very often the tax collectors were meches de'in l'kitzvah. They had no rules. They went around the town, they brought their official bodyguards and their henchmen, they walked into a person's house, and they just picked a number, they looked at his nose, they looked at his house, they just made up the numbers as they went along. There was no system, there was no kitzvah, there was no set amount. The Gemara is saying that a meches de'in l'kitzvah, if there's no system, it's not a fair tax, it's just totally, totally subjective based on what the tax collector decides, Dina de Machusa, Dina does not apply. And in such a case, if you're able to in any way avoid paying the taxes, whatever is entailed, you're even making this neder, you're allowed to do so. If the tax is a fair tax, there is a set amount, everyone pays the same rate, there that's called a meches diyesh lekitzvah, and there the Gemara says Shmuel's concept of Dina de Machusa, Dina will apply. And there, this halacha of the Mishnah is not true. And there, a person does not have the right to make a neder to try to avoid paying the taxes. Now, we see from this two very important halachas. Number one, that when there is a fair tax, when it's applied uniform to everyone, it's a yesh lo kitzvah, then all opinions agree, dina de machusa dina. We say the law of the land is a law. And a person does not have the right to lie, to make a neder, in order to avoid paying his taxes. The second halacha is that if it's an eilei kitzvah, if the tax is unfair, there's no set amount, there the idea of dina machusa dina does not apply. And if a person has a way to avoid paying the taxes, he has every right to do so. Now, it's important to realize that this meches de eilei kitzvah did not just mean that someone went ahead and was breaking the law. It means the melech gave him the right to do whatever he wanted, which means there was a civil law that whatever when the tax collector knocks on your door, whatever he demands, you have to pay. Afal pikein, because it's an ein lo kitzvah, because it is unfair, because there's no system, halacha rejects this law, and we will not apply dina machusa dina. So what we see clearly from this Gemara is that if you have a law, even though it's a clear law, if it is unfair, if it's ein l'kitzvah, if it discriminates, there halacha will reject such a law, and if you have a way to avoid paying it, you have every right to do so.
But if it is across the board, but it's exorbitant, that's okay.
We don't find anywhere a limit to how much or what the dollar amount is. In going through the tshuvas, the highest tax that I found was a third, 33% tax rate. Today, obviously, taxes are much higher. But I've not found what. So that's an interesting question. Taxes were very often based more on assets. You do find, which means that the taxes do not have to be the same per person. Even though wealthier people are paying more, that's because they have more assets. That is still considered yesh lekitzva because everyone is paying the same rate. It's only when the tax collector can do what he wants that's considered an ein lekitzva. Now, a progressive tax rate, which is what we have today, where people pay based on the amount that they earn, the more you earn, not just the higher the percentage you pay, there I have not found any makar that discusses it. I mean, al pisvara, the same way they can take a percentage of your income, and that's called yesh lekitzva because it's applied to everyone uniformly. So bisvara, I would say the same thing to a progressive rate, but I have not found anyone that actually, it does not seem like that this was actually done back then. So I haven't found any discussion of it. So as long as there is a fixed rate, as long as it's applied to everyone equally, there we will say dina mechusa dina. The moment we start discriminating, there it's ein lekitzva, and there you have the right to go ahead and to do whatever you can to avoid paying. Now, this idea of ein lekitzva is applied to other cases as well. And as we'll see, whenever a shaila comes up in dina mechusa dina, one of the first and most basic questions is this a rule of yesh lekitzva or not? Is this a fair rule or not? And this is obviously fairly subjective. And many of the machloksim that you have about dina mechusa dina really boil down to whoever the pesach was that was asked the question, did he consider the rule fair or not? An example that we'll discuss more in detail in a future shiur, but there are many tshuvas that discuss rent control. Rent control. Now, if you think about rent control, the government's going ahead and making restrictions on a landlord, what his rights are, what he can charge for rent. So do we apply dina mechusa dina to such laws or not? So putting aside the other issues, some places can say, yes, it's dina mechusa dina, it's a fair rule, we're protecting the tenants, otherwise the greedy landlords would take advantage of them, they'd constantly be threatening them with eviction, and therefore it's a good rule, dina mechusa dina will apply. Other tshuvas say no. Other tshuvas say, what do you mean? It's very nice we're protecting the tenants, but we're doing that at the landlord's expense. This rule is socialist and communist, it's just a way of redistributing wealth, it's ein lekitzva, and therefore there's no dina mechusa dina on rent control. Now again, that's the point. It has guidelines, but what we see from ein lekitzva is that it's not an across the board rule. A government can do what they want. When a government crosses the line and does something which is ein lekitzva, where they're essentially it's government sanctioned theft, there halacha will reject such a law. So if the poskim that believe that rent control is unfair and it's just a way to redistribute wealth will also consider that an ein lekitzva and say dina mechusa dina cannot apply.
Well, then that's not a lot focus on what kitzva means. One thing is kitzva, one thing is like.
That's the point. Kitzva means it's unfair. The ein lekitzva means it's unfair. The case in the Gemara is unfair is what? That's my point is it is subjective. And that is why some poskim will say rent control is the ein lekitzva. Because you're going ahead, you're helping the tenants at the expense of the landlord, and the government has no right to go ahead and start picking winners and picking losers. And Hasharon says it's a bunch of communists that made this rule. On the other hand, you have probably most poskim say that no, it's a reasonable law. It's protecting tenants because otherwise it's difficult for people to move. Okay, so the Chavetel, neither the Chavetel Zasharon or the Minchas Yitzchak, I think, were landlords or tenants. They were trying to look at it from a Torah point of view, and they disagreed. And there's not the first machlokes that we have, but one of the reasons why you will see that in the Halacha L'maisa, there's a very wide range of psukim you will get about Dina Mechusa Dina, one of the reasons is that much of it boils down to this question. What's considered fair, and what's considered theft. And therefore, everyone can agree to the halachas. You can learn Pshat and the Gemara and the Rashba and the Shulchan Aruch the same, and you can still argue on halacha l'maisa, because to an extent, it's a judgment call of whether the Torah would consider this fair or not fair. Correct. In the case of kitzvah, it's certainly a question of equally applied. But the question is, why is that important? And the reason why that's important is to take $1,000 from this person and nothing from the other person is unfair. And therefore, you're right, it's not in the kitzvah, it's not what the words mean, but they learn from this concept that it has to be a fair law.
So they translated that to mean fairness.
Correct. Correct. Correct.
Even the ones that were in the kitzvah weren't fair.
That's true. That's true. The place can give. We'll see from the examples. The place can give the government a fair amount of leeway. In some cases, a shocking amount of leeway. I mean, to jump to the most extreme case, but you know, it's just to bring out how extreme some of these cases are. There's actually a discussion in three tshuvos about during the times of the Inquisition. This is in Anconia, I think it was in part of Portugal, where one of the Anusim was caught. The law was that if you were caught being a secret Jew, you were burnt at the stake and your assets were confiscated. There was such a situation where someone was caught, his assets were confiscated, he actually escaped, he managed to escape, and they then, when they escaped, there was a din Torah afterwards. The entire involved with it was relevant to someone who owed him money. So the question really boiled down to is whether the law that anyone caught practicing Yiddishkeit, their assets are confiscated. The question is, do we apply Dinin Machlus Dinin to such a law? There are three different shuvas that discuss it. What happened is like this: the money was the church did not care what the Psak Halacha was, whether Dinin Machlus Dinin or not. That money was gone. The issue was, someone owed money to this fellow who was caught. When he was caught, and they announced that anyone who owes him money has to turn it over to the king, which he did. When they escaped, the fellow who was the creditor said, "You never paid me back. It's very nice you gave it to the king, but that nothing to do with me. I'm still entitled to that money." The person who paid said, "What are you talking about? Dina machusa dina. I follow the law, and therefore, once I follow the law, I no longer owe you the money." So, fine, but that's a question of matzal atzmai b'mamon chaver. If you owe somebody money, a fellow comes over to you with a gun and says, "Give me the money you owe him, or I'll kill you." So you're going to give him the money because you want to save your life. But that's not a defense against that person. That person lent you the money; he's entitled to it back. What some gangster did with a gun to you is not doesn't relieve you of responsibility to the other person. So if there's no dina machusa dina, this rule is nothing more than a gangster forcing you to give the government money that's truly owed to the creditor. The person returned the money, turned the money over to the government in accordance with the law.
Why did he do it?
No, he was afraid for his life. But that's really his point. If you owe someone money and a third person comes with a gun and says, "Give it to me or I'll shoot you," so if you're going to give him the money to save your life, but it doesn't relieve you. Now, if it's a pikadon, if you're holding someone else's item, so then we can discuss it. Then you're a shomer, then you're in, and there's patur of oinus. Here, there's no specific money. There's a choyv, there's a debt. So the question is, have you paid the debt by paying it to the government? So there are actually three tshuvas that discuss the matter. What? Why? No. Oh, very good, very good. So he's saying it's discrimination against the Jews. It's only someone who... It's like this.
It's a general law in those days, and people that are condemned to death, their possessions belong to the king. This is one application of it.
Okay, that's true. The idea that if you're condemned to death, the king will get your assets, that's one of the Rambam's examples of Dina Machlus Dina. That's not the issue, because there's a logic to it. The same way he can kill you for treason, he can confiscate your assets. But if you haven't done anything to deserve death, the king just decides one day to shoot you for no apparent reason, both the killing and the confiscation of the assets will not qualify for Dina Machlus Dina. Okay, but let me just go back to your point. Your point was that you're discriminating against the Jews. So it's fascinating tshuvas. There are two tshuvas from the Ma'arik. Ma'arik, in one case of Ein LeKitzvah, says the situation was where they taxed bankers more than everybody else. Seems nothing has changed. Whenever the government needs money, you go after the bankers because that's where the money is. And there was a tax, Malva Baribis, they paid more than anybody else. Zok the Ma'arik, there's no dina machusa dina. Because the government has no right to go ahead and discriminate punct against people who are in this industry, this field. There's no reason for it. And therefore, that's a case of Ein LeKitzvah, Tzchamsenus, and Demalchus. And Ma'arik says there will be no dina machusa dina. No, that's different. That's different. That's different. Because everyone has the same rate. Everyone has the same rules. What they do is, the more you have, the more you pay. That is very likely, yesh LeKitzvah. I said, I don't have a riot to that, but there, because everyone is treated the same. When you're going ahead and you're singling out people who do this, people who are bankers, and a person making the same amount of money, but instead of being a banker, he's a farmer, he's going to pay a different rate. So there you're discriminating against one class of people, and that is Ein LeKitzvah. Wait a second.
This is a class. Wealthy people are...
No. Well,
it distributes another way of distributing wealth.
No. So this is one tshuva of the Ma'arik. Ma'arik has another tshuva, where he discusses what would be in a case, and this is extremely common. If you go through the tshuvas and the Rishayim, this has happened all the time, where the government, there was a Jew tax. Jews paid a special tax. Ma'arik says, there's nothing wrong. Because this country is a nice goyish country. All the goyim in the country pay a certain rate. If you want to practice a different religion, you want to come to our country. So we're going to have different rules for different people. Ma'arik says, that's not called discrimination. Because since you're part of a different religion, it makes sense. You're a different class, you're a different group. It makes sense to treat you differently. And similarly, the Chochmah Shloimeh says, there's nothing wrong with the government saying we're going to charge immigrants a different rate. We have our country. We're very happy the way it is. We don't want outsiders coming in. If you want to come in, these are the terms that you have to accept. Now, the Goyin points out, L'chor, these two Ma'ariks are astira. Because one Ma'arik says you're allowed to discriminate against Jews. The other Ma'arik says you cannot discriminate against bankers. So why is it that Ma'arik seems to like bankers better than Jews?
Because they're from the country.
What?
They're from the country.
Right. So with Ma'arik, and you see the Ramah, many places can bring down both Pesachim and Ma'arik without having any issue with it. They seem to hold that no. To have a Jew or a Goy, that's a difference, a different kind of person, a different... If you have a Goyish country, they have a religious country. So they don't have to accept anyone in from a foreign religion. If they want to do so, they have the right to give different tax rates. Masha Einkein, if you have the same people, you're going to tell them if this is your job, you'll pay this rate. If that's your job, you'll pay another rate. There, there's no rationale to that. There's no explanation for it, and there that would be considered an Ein LeKitzvah. So, what? Well, they tell you to leave. If you want to leave the country, you can leave the country. So, okay, now I guess. Wait a second. I'm not saying halacha l'maisa, there's dina machusa dina there. My point is there are three long tshuvas in the Marashdam, the Devarivos, and the Mabit. They all go back and forth. One of them comes out, it's Pasha, there's no dina machusa dina. The other one is Masupik. One of them seems to say dina machusa dina would apply. Again, it's a tremendous chiddush l'halacha. I'm not saying you pass them like that. But my point is, before you jump to conclusions, it's Ein LeKitzvah, the governments are a bunch of rishonim, and take a pause, take a step back, and because it's not so simple. The bar to call something Ein LeKitzvah was quite high in the Achronim.
Maybe just a side question, but this guy where you owe the money, this huge play effect, I mean, money looks on it, so he doesn't have any shoes.
Okay, so let's try to stay focused on the Dina Machusa Dina aspect. So I don't know if there's a clear answer to that. I tell you, the Chavetz Chaim Sofer by rent control says it's Ein LeKitzvah because it's a bunch of communists and socialists that are robbing the rich to pay the poor. So he says that he considers that an Ein LeKitzvah. No. It was after. He's not talking about communist Russia. He's saying that the democratic. He said even the people who wrote these laws had socialist leanings, and that's why they did it. The discussion of rent control was generally most of the tshuvos of the discussion were the laws that were instituted shortly after the world wars, where the poskim that uphold it do it because there was a crisis, there was a housing shortage, landlords took advantage of the fact that entire cities were bombed out, and therefore there was a need for the takan. But we'll get back to rent control in a future show. Just bringing out this point that we will find very different psukim, even if they're not arguing halacha, because very often they will argue about whether it's considered ein lekitzvah and yesh lekitzvah. It is not an idea or a concept that is clearly defined in Shulchan Aruch. I'm going to leave that to you to decide. Now, another point that you have to realize with this Ein L'Kitzvah is that Ein L'Kitzvah meant the entire system was corrupt. Or to be more precise, there was no system. It was Ein L'Kitzvah. The tax collector did whatever he wanted. Masha'en Kain, if you have a Yesh L'Kitzvah, but there's a certain amount of corruption, it's fair to say that every government since Brias Olam had some level of corruption. That's just the human condition. That's what happens. That does not make it into an Ein L'Kitzvah. And the Kitzvah was a case where the tax collector could do whatever he wanted. He was above the law. There were no rules. He can do whatever he chose. There we say there's no dina lochus adina. That's not a law. That's extortion. And you have the right to evade it. Mashenke, in a system that is fair, the fact that you can point to a couple of people, a couple of rotten apples that break the law, there that would not make it into an Ein L'Kitzvah, and Dino Machusto Dino would still apply. Now, I'm saying that even though I'm from New Jersey. But I think it's clear that in the United States or in most Western democracies, the fact that there, even though there certainly is some corruption under the table, the rules are generally fair, and there will be Dino Machusto Dino. Now, I gave a shiur a couple of years ago about Dina Malchus Adina, and I was discussing this point, and someone in the audience blew up. He starts yelling and screaming, what are you talking about? The United States is corrupt. The politicians are all corrupt. They take bribes, and it's Ein L'Kitzvah. You don't know, you're not even. I tried arguing with him, tried reasoning with him. I couldn't get a word in. He was just went ballistic. So finally, I couldn't get a word. I couldn't argue with him. I waited until he finished his tirade, and then I just calmly told him, by the way, you know you're being recorded. You know you're being recorded. So again, he actually went on another tirade, and okay, so that was and that was that. It was, you know, a little bit unusual, but it slipped my mind. I didn't really make much of it. Until a few months later, this fellow ended up on the front page of the New York Times for various activities that are inconsistent with Dina de Malchus Adino. We'll leave it at that. The first thing we did is made sure that the recording was taken down off the website. That was the first thing that happened. I don't know if the NSA had it, they didn't have it, but that was the first order of business. But so it is certainly the kind of thing that people use, if they have to be Moira Hatter, it's something it's easy to call something an Ein L'Kitzvah. But in the Halacha L'Maisa, again, as we go through the Tshuvos, the bar is pretty high. It is fairly difficult to actually call something an Ein L'Kitzvah. Now, another interesting machlokes you have is what happens if the king sets a tax, and he's supposed to take $1,000 per person. Now, this tax collector takes his $1,000, but the tax collector is not paid enough, so he adds a couple of percentage points which he puts into his pocket. So what happens is that whenever he collects the tax, he doesn't follow the rules. He's collecting $1,000, he's collecting $1,500. Now, he's breaking the rules, but on the other hand, $1,000 he's entitled to. So how do you deal with this case? Do you say that, okay, $1,000 he's entitled to, that you have to pay? The extra that he's trying to extort from you, that, do what you want, that try to avoid. Or do you say no? Once he's breaking the rules, once he's not following the laws, perhaps he loses his rights to Dina de Malchus Adin. So the Ma'abit, and it's Daigit from the Rosh and the Dharam as well, says The moment the tax collector is asking for anything more than he's entitled to, all bets are off. You can do what you want. You can try to evade the entire tax. Many argue, and they say, no, it's true the tax collector is a ganav. So you don't have to pay the ganav the amount that he wants to steal. But just because the tax collector is a ganav is not a heter for you to be a ganav. And since al pi halacha dina machus adina, you owe the $1,000, so it's true if you can get out of the extra $500, you have every right to do so. But to use that as an excuse not to pay anything, there most places seem to argue and say that you cannot do, and at least the amount that you al pi din you really owe, there you have to pay. My bit seemed to have understood. The case was, and it doesn't speak this out, but at least what I think the pshat is, that let's go back. What happened over here? The tax collector paid the king, and he bought the right to collect the taxes. Now, once he paid the king got his money. Everything now is going to the tax collector's pocket. Why do you have to pay the tax collector? When the king's coming to collect the money, dina machus dina, the king's entitled to taxes. Here, he's not the king, it's a tax collector. The answer is that when the king sold it to the tax collector now steps into the king's shoes. Now, dina machus dina applies to him. The moment this person is not following the king's rules, the moment he's struck out on his own, so now he no longer has the dina machus dina. And now, if you can get out of the entire tax, according to the Ma'abit, you have every right to do so.
What happens if the tax collector is Jewish? There are a bunch of, like, the master to tell him he's, you know, the king that he's charging too much.
Okay, so that's you know, Hilchos Mesira is a completely, is a whole different sugyo. That's, you know, that's not for now.
Can a Jewish guy be the tax collector?
Yes. So that actually, the place do discuss it. To the extent that the tax itself is a fair tax, and the government is entitled to that tax, There's nothing wrong with a Jew collecting it. Now, even further, there's a case where the tax collector, the Jewish tax collector, was paid on commission. He got a percentage of the money that came in. But there as well, as long as the tax itself is fair, the government has the right to collect the tax, there's nothing wrong with this Jewish tax collector collecting it and taking his cut. Because the same way the king could have kept all of it, he has the right to pay this Jewish employee a percentage of the proceeds. If it's an Eilat Kitzvah, then you have a problem. Then you're being misayed. Then what's happening here is extortion and theft. And the same way you can't work for the mafia, you wouldn't be able to work for such a government.
Can you report somebody who didn't pay the tax?
Okay, reporting is the next step. So that we mentioned, there's an Igros Moshe that discusses working for the IRS. Again, he has, it's that was in Hilchos Mesira, we discussed it, it's not for now. So that goes back to the original issue. If the case that the Poskim are talking about is when the king put a knas, he assessed the tax, and you're collecting that amount of money. So they are the same way, the king has the right to collect it, you can collect it, you can take a percentage. A whistleblower where you are reporting to the king, that would go into the questions of Mesira. Now, we went through Hilchos Mesira, we pointed out where Dina Machus Dina sometimes plays a role, where at least B'di'eved, you won't be considered a Meiser. But it's more a question of Mesira than in Hilchos Dina Machus Dina.
This is only like tax. You're reporting someone, I think he didn't probably pay his tax.
But in Hilchos Mesira, we saw Mesira does not have to be on a fashas. Meiser mamon Yisrael liyad akum. If it's inappropriate to turn over money of a Jew to a guy, that could qualify for Hilchos Mesira.
How would it be worse to allow the government to collect its own?
Okay, so as far as there are two separate issues. The place that we're referring to before are talking about a case where the government knows who you are. They know you have to pay this amount of money, and they have the person who they hire to knock on the door, the person who actually does their accounting and the collection, is a Jew. That is not a question of Mesira, because there's nothing that's changing from the fact that you're doing it. If you don't knock on the door, the next employee of the government will go ahead and knock on his door. You bring up a completely new issue, which is, can I be a whistleblower? Can I report to the government that you may not know this, and as far as you're concerned, you audited the returns and they were fine, but I'm telling you this additional information which will allow you to go after this Jew. That's a separate issue. The Shach in Hilchos Mesira says, at least in some cases, that you do not become a Moiser if the money that you turned over is Chayav al pi dina Mechus Adina. But again, that's another whole sugya. We're not going to go through the parameters of when that applies. Anyway, so going back, so what we have so far is Everyone agrees to the concept of Dina Machusa Dina. Everyone agrees that Halacha recognizes at least the right of a government to tax its citizens. However, that tax has to be fair. It has to be a Yesh LeKitzvah. The bar of Yesh LeKitzvah, Ein LeKitzvah, is not clearly defined, but it's certainly a lot higher than many of us would presume. What we have to discuss next is we have to discuss, number one, what is the makar of this idea, of this concept. It's Shmuel says it. Shmuel doesn't explain why. So although everyone agrees to it, the question is what makar is. And the second and more second question is how far does it go? What laws or when do we apply Dina Machusa Dina, and what are the limitations? And then Meretz Hashem will do over the next 2 weeks.